what is up? You have found We Like the Blazers. I am Brandon Goldman, and over there is the effervescent, the effluent, the suspiciously attractive Ryan Whitledge. Ryan, what's up, man?
What is up, Brandon? How are you doing?
Not much, man. I'm good. How am I doing? I'm doing good. I have to say, now that we are starting to record more often, which we're going to talk about in just a second, I really appreciate your background. And my background, as you see, the things are starting to come in. That wall will have various Blazers accoutrement at some point. How long did it take you to get your wall situated, by the way?
You mean like to acquire the things for it or to actually
get them all set? Like, cause you have shelves and you've obviously thought about spacing. I think it works really well. Like, I like the different angles on it.
In all honesty, I probably threw it all together with the spacing in about 20 minutes. This is a first draft of just, I knew everything that I had to work with and just kind of threw it together and threw it up. Although the more and more that I'm in here and I can see behind me in the recording, I need a decorative light plate because that just bugs me because it's right over my shoulder. It's right there. It's the most plain thing. Either that or I just need to put like little Blazer pinwheel logos on the buttons just so there's something there.
I like it. Let's do it. I support that. I will be asking for your help as I get my office set up. It's good. It's good to be, you know, kind of in your space and feeling good about it. Ryan, I did want to start off today's show on a slightly more serious note. As you may know, if you're listening to this or if you've been in Blazer Circle for any amount of time, Dave Deckard has been the longtime manager of Blazers Edge, which is the largest and most active Blazers community that I know of. And, about a week and a half ago, Dave had a pretty serious health incident and he was in the hospital. And frankly, it was very touchy for a while there. The good news is that Dave is now back home. He is recovering. I am very thankful for that. And as we all are, and I just wanted to say a quick thing, because Dave is someone who has been, you know, with Blazers Edge for what, 15 plus years. He's been in Blazers circles for longer than that. He's written, you know, hundreds and thousands of Blazers articles, has done a ton of podcasts. He's been a part of the Blazers fabric and kind of the fabric of the Blazers community for a really long time. And he's someone who doesn't toot his own horn a whole lot. And I just wanted to say that, like, Dave means a lot to me, not just as a Blazers figure and as someone who is the managing editor of the site that I am contributing to and have in the past, but as a friend and as a colleague, as a mentor. I don't have a whole lot else to say, but just, you know, Dave, you are loved. We appreciate you. We are really, really happy that you are back home and, you know, rest up and get back as quick as you can. And Blazers Edge, very active community. It wouldn't exist today without Dave. Period. And I don't mean wouldn't exist in its form. It wouldn't be around today if it weren't for him, the amount of work that he puts in, not only to produce content, but to help people like me get better at what they do and become more knowledgeable Blazers fans. It's really, his impact is immeasurable. And so all to say, Dave, we appreciate you and we're glad that you're back home and recovering.
Yeah. I mean, it's Blazers Edge has been, you know, it's gone through, definitely has gone through its ups and downs and popularity and relevance, but it over the last, you know, 10 years, is so many people and voices and whatnot have come and gone through that. But Dave is definitely the guiding hand that keeps this thing together. And I remember back when I first got into starting podcasting, me and my two other buddies, you know, we always kind of made our joke of, all right, well, if we do nothing else, who's the Mount Rushmore of people that we've always wanted to talk to that, you know, if we end up only doing four episodes, let's just talk to these four people. And I think it was unanimous amongst us three that Dave was the very first name on our list, somebody that we had all looked up to and kind of idolized for, you know, both his writing voice, his writing style, how his personality comes out, his ability to connect with his words, and then just kind of see how he, you know, helped take the reins and grow the site from the, you know, the people that came before him, you know, and there's definitely people out there that, you know, like Ben Golliver, that you know, are big national name brands that worked side by side with Dave, and, you know, he helped them, you know, grow their career. So he's definitely a large, looming and important and loved voice, you know, in Trailblazers community. And I don't think you'd be hard pressed to find anybody that could say a single negative word about him.
That's well said. And speaking of Blazers Edge, Ryan, I have some really exciting news. We Like the Blazers has sold out. We are now a part of the Rogue Media Network, which includes the Blazers Edge family of podcasts. I am so excited to be able to talk about this now, and I know that you are too. Really quick, we have Corey Dickman, who is a contributor at Blazers Edge and also manages the podcast there, as well as being one of the principals at Rogue Media. Blazers Edge is going to have a rotation of podcasts, which includes We Like the Blazers. It also includes the Rip City Roundtable, which is a weekly that is hosted by Corey. I will be the third guest on that podcast, which has not yet dropped. So you should definitely check that out. And also includes the Trail Daddy, which is hosted by Dave Deckard. And like, look, you should totally listen to the first episode of the Trail Daddy, because look, I mean, that name, I mean, he talks about it. Like, look, I mean, it's a little like that makes it feel slightly weird. But like, look, he's been doing it for longer than anyone else. And like, and so I think it's, you know, well earned, well deserved. And he said himself, look, it's supposed to be cheeky, it's supposed to be funny. But Ryan, this does mean that we are going to be recording on a weekly basis. We are now a part of the Rogue Media Network, which we're really proud to say, and also a part of this Blazers Edge family of podcasts. Ryan, what say you about the fact that we have sold our soul to get completely ludicrously rich? Because that is what this is about. We are both making seven figures per episode. It's in our contract. No, it's not.
I was going to say most of those figures are behind the decimal point. So that is the 0.00001, you know, that's that thousandth or millionth of a penny. Yeah. We will be getting rich. No time soon, but no, we have sold out. We are corporate media shills. Everything, everybody has screamed about us online. We're doing this only for access and the clout and the clicks. And all of my opinions will now change based off of what can get me the most success. We're going to stay the same.
Had me there in the first half.
This is, you know, this is a labor of love for us. I think you and I had joked that, oh, so all it took for us to get back on a regular schedule was other people to be behind us and say, hey, you guys should really record more often.
Well, hey, and also, like, I think it's like, to be fair, we maybe haven't been the most consistent, but we have a pretty large library of episodes. We've been doing this a while. We've had tons of really awesome guests. And I appreciate that someone like Corey listened to the show and he said, you know what? You two are both idiots, but I love your chemistry. I'm like, yes. Like, no, he didn't actually say that, but he did say that he appreciated the back and forth between us, because Ryan, you and I are good friends. We love each other. We know that we can go after each other on Blazer stuff and it's still all good. But like, no, man, I'm excited. Like, this is really cool. You should definitely check out roguemedianetwork.com, because they have a ton of podcasts, not just sports related, but other genres too. Scope them out. Anything else you want to say on that before we move it along?
No, it's just this, you know, it's exciting times. It's new times. You know, this is kind of one of those things where, you know, especially as you grow as a podcast and you get the opportunities to join these kind of networks, and, you know, other doors can open up. It's, you know, there's so many other sports podcasts that are available through the Rogue Network. You know, we might be looking at, you know, you're talking in off season trades, you know, bringing on somebody else, you know, who covers another team that's affected by this trade. And it just kind of opens up all these different aspects and avenues that, you know, we haven't necessarily had, or that would have been significantly more difficult for us to, you know, go down. And so that's just kind of the exciting thing, is to see where this goes, see where this partnership takes us. You know, we wouldn't do it if we weren't excited for it. You know, we joke about being sellouts and being corporate shills, but that has absolutely nothing to do with it. It's like I said, it's a labor of love. And we thank Rogue for letting our silly little podcast join their network. And we apologize in advance that we couldn't come up with a name anywhere near as creative as Trail Daddy podcast, but we'll stand by the name.
We like the Blazers. It's catchy. It's easy to remember. I want to say a couple more quick things I've forgotten. One is that what does this change about the show? Nothing. We asked actually, like, is it okay if we still cuss sometimes? And, you know, like, and Corey was very clear. Like, he liked our show because he appreciates us, our banter, our repertoire back and forth, the ideas we have, the way that we approach stuff. And yeah, like, we're not everyone's cup of tea, and that's totally okay, which is why you should check out the other podcasts on their network. But nothing's going to change about the show, up to and including the way that you get the show will also not change. We're in the process right now of making sure that the way we upload our episodes will get out to the very same feed. So my understanding is that nothing will change by how you find the show. Nothing will change by how we approach the show, other than we're going to do it more consistently. And like you said, we might have more people on, which is super fun. It's exciting times. And again, like, thank you to Rogue and to Corey for letting us come on. I actually do want to say, can I say one more quick thing before we talk about the Blazers? I know it's been like a lot of me talking, which is typical.
It's either you or me in this medium, so you're taking the work off me. Have at it. Say something else.
I mean, John back there could say something, you know, Malcolm behind you could say something. We have, you know, Miles down there, or the 2017-18 Blazers could have something to say about it if we wanted to talk.
Julio Rodriguez over there,
you know, Julio Rodriguez,
tiny
Calabro could say something. I also wanted to say that, like, part of being a member of the Blazers Edge family of podcasts, like, I've now been back at Blazers Edge for, you know, the entirety of this season, doing mostly previews. And lately I've been doing recaps, and particularly I'm starting to get back into the longer recaps. So Blazers Edge, they will have an instant recap, which is either a blow by blow, quarter by quarter, or it's like, here are some things that I noticed. Then we'll have a second recap. You may remember, you mentioned Ben Golliver back in the day.
Ben Golliver one. That was the first read.
Exactly.
The first read in the morning.
And, you know, I mean, again, Ben is a national writer. He's obviously very good at what he does, and he blessed Blazers Edge with his talent for a long time. And, you know, and he was blessed to be a part of them too. Like, it launched his career. I was one of those people too, that would wait for the Golliver article to drop. So it used to be that he would be reporting in person, would come back and generate that article. Now what it's become has been a chance for writers at Blazers Edge to take a more analytical view of the game. So not just what happened, but why. And so I took my first crack at a longer analysis recap during the Blazers overtime win against the Raptors. Awesome game, super fun. Ryan, I have something horrible to admit.
Uh-oh. You had ChatGPT write the whole thing, didn't you?
No, I thought about not doing it, but I've thought about how many people do that, because I don't know if it's like the weird puritanical streak in me, but part of the process of writing, and even the struggle of it, and kind of the fear of, like, can I come up with something that anyone gives two shits about? That is part of why I enjoy it. And I actually do enjoy that process. No, not that. It's that I'm not particularly good at analyzing basketball. Now, this is hard for me to admit. Why? Because I host a weekly podcast that's now part of this awesome network. Why? Because I've been in Blazer circles for over a decade. I've done tons of writing. I've done tons of recaps. Ryan, I'm telling you, it is hard for me, just framed this way, the why behind the what. It's difficult for me to see sometimes. And so something I've been doing, and I'd be curious your thoughts on this. And there are different ways to watch basketball. You can watch it for fun. You can watch it as background noise. You can watch it because you're overly invested, or you can watch it for trying to pick out what's happening, how it's affecting other things on the court, finding themes from game to game or from quarter to quarter. And that detailed analysis it comes difficult for me. And so I have been searching out resources that I hope over time will help me get better at this. And I wanted to ask you, like, when you watch basketball, how is it that you watch generally? Are you watching for this, like, deep analytical trends and the why behind the what? Or are you watching because, like most of us because you just like the team. Like, what is the, what's your approach to watching the game of basketball?
My approach, the farthest that I'll get into like any sort of analytical deep dive tends to be when I'm player curious, in the sense of that I will go through some phases where, like, and I've done this a lot for the games in which Scoot's played and I'm watching him, where it doesn't matter if the ball is in his hands, if he's off ball, if it's offense, defensive side, I do nothing but just like watch a guy and see how he moves and see what he does and just kind of pay attention that way. That, but that's if I'm intentionally going to try to get into like a deep, not normal watching kind of thing. Other than that, and I only do that again, like when I have this morbid curiosity to do so. Other than that, I take in the game. I find that the less distractions, the better. And the more I am able to absorb about the game, and like, I can't live tweet. I can't live tweet a game anymore. God bless Danny Morang and his ability and, you know, and a couple other guys, you know, Sean Hyken's really good at cat or Casey's really good at it, you know, but God bless their ability to
I'm training all week.
But their ability to watch the game and tweet as much as they do about it and providing the insight, because I used to try that. But by the time I got my hot tweet fired off, I've missed like the next seven plays. I've completely removed like the internet from it. Other than that, it's, you know, I've actually, sometimes when I'm watching with friends, I find myself even more in depth and invested in it. But, you know,
do you feel like you're providing them your service of like looking at it? Are you like talking to them about
the service of being
like
in my presence? They get that luxury of being in my presence. And a Blazer game just happens to be on. Yeah. But most of the people that I tend to watch Blazer games with are other big Blazer fans. You know, granted, if I watch with my wife and I try to, you know, commentate to her, I'll immediately get hit with a pillow because I'm ruining the experience for her. But I don't know if other people take that away or not, but no, well,
I'll just say, like, for me, it's hard for me to get from, hey, I notice that DeAndre Ayton is dominating, right? Like, I notice that Delano Banton, you should have seen, did you see the preview that I did? Did you read that one where that one commenter was using a bunch of like dominating puns? We're not going to get into it.
No,
it's hard for me to get from like, oh, I can see that that's happening. I can see that Delano Banton is driving over and over again. And then make the turn as to why is that happening? Like, again, I'm being as honest as I can possibly be. During the Toronto game, DeAndre Ayton had a great game. It looked like Scoot Henderson and Delano Banton were able to drive into the lane and do stuff in the paint whenever they wanted. And I saw that right away. And then I was watching with my wife, Cassie, who played basketball in college and knows more about basketball than me and can see the game a little bit more in a different way than I can. I was trying to figure out why that was happening. The best I could come up with, Ryan, and this is so sad, was that Toronto Raptors, they don't have a lot of big people. And so there aren't a lot of big people. And so the big people can do stuff and the other guys can drive into it. I know there has got to be more to basketball than big people stop other people. And like Anthony Simons good. I know there's more. And so like one thing I appreciated, which is exactly what you just said, it came from Steve Jones Jr., who is a co-host of the Dunker Spot with Nikias Duncan. Also the son of Blazers legend, Steve Snapper Jones, longtime Blazers color commentator. And he said, you know, this answer, you may not like it, but it's that you have to get curious about what you're watching, which again is exactly what you just said. And then you have to focus on it. And then you generate your own questions and maybe you can't answer them that game. But if you keep doing that and you keep then digging like between games, after the game, during the game, eventually you start being able to generate better questions and also being able to answer some of them. So Ryan, as with all things, unfortunately, the answer for me is I got to put the work in. Shit.
You gotta. So are you trying to say that you need the game to slow down for you so that you can just see more and take in more?
Yes. Yes, I am Scoot Henderson. That is right. You got that just right. I am just as stylish and just as athletic as he is. That is what needs to happen for me, is the game does need to slow down for me. And it is, like, it's a skill, it's a talent. One more thing that you mentioned about live tweeting, like Danny Meringue, I noticed that he live tweeted during the Raptors game. He tweeted something like, "Hey, Tumani Kamara looks like he's moving faster on offense and making decisions quicker than I've ever seen him." And it was interesting because then during the post game interview, Danny Meringue ask Coach Chauncey Billups that exact question. "Coach, I noticed Tumani Kamara seems to be moving quicker on offense and making decisions faster. Is that what you saw too?" Chauncey Billups agreed with him. And so, like, people like Danny, who, again, they put the work in. And also, like, I would say too, like, Danny has a natural mind for the game of basketball. He put the work in and he is good at it already. That's a good combination. So, you know, a little bit of natural gift and a lot of hard work, but he can do that. And, you know, I know I'm never going to be like a Danny Meringue level of analyst or like a Steve Jones Jr. level of analyst. And that's okay. I just want to get better at it. So that's, yeah.
And I think that's important too, because it's so many people, you know, especially with this and with what we're doing, you know, or, you know, with writing or with, you know, live tweeting, you know, sports games, whether it be basketball, football, any sort of, you know, kind of thing. They see somebody that they admire or they appreciate, or they're like, "Hey, that's really cool that they do that." And sometimes they try to just emulate them and then do what that person does, because they're like, this person's successful at doing it. If I just do that. And there is something to, like, eventually the market kind of gets a little overcrowded to some degree. And so it's nice that you say, you know, you can recognize people that do things a certain way, you know, and you're not necessarily trying to copy them to get that success. You're just like, "I want to bring my own eyes, but I know I need to get better at it." The funny thing too, is that everything that we're saying about writing, watching sports, you know, talking about sports, you know, whatever, all also equates down to the actual sport itself. This is what we're watching, these players such as Tumani Kamara, you know, Chris Murray, Scoot Henderson, you know, Shaedon Sharpe, whenever he gets back. These are the things that we're watching these guys do. Like, they've watched other players that they're now playing in the league with, you know, there's certain aspects of their game they're trying to emulate. And now, you know, in the start of their NBA career, they're finding out what does or doesn't work. What is, you know, if there's something that they thought that they were great at, but now, you know, they're in a level where everybody else is great as well. So that basic thing, you know, they need to tweak, they need to work on, they need to do all this. So every analogy we've made along the way of talking about, like, how we watch sports, how we talk about sports, how we quote unquote report or commentate on sports it holds true to the people that are playing the sport that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's a good point. With that, Ryan, shall we talk about this team that we call the Portland Trailblazers?
Yeah, I'm getting a little worried on my double up bet that I had made. So, you know, famously, I had told everyone and their mother to take the under on the Blazers win total.
It was
28 and a half wins, I believe, was the original, which I'm safe as kittens for that. Safe as kittens. They're sitting at 18 and 45 before tonight's Celtics game. Safe as kittens. But there was another one where it was an alternate line where it was 22 and a half wins. And that was some really decent odds there. And I'm not going to lie,
I can't lose.
I can talk myself into at least three more wins on this schedule in front of us. But there's also a world in which I could see five, and five is just going to be the world's worst case scenario here. Well, that's going to put him 23. So, and I can't have that, but we're running out. Who else do we shut down? Who else do they put on ice? We're running out of guys to put segue. On ice.
What a perfect segue. It's like, you've been doing this for years, Ryan. Doesn't it depend on who plays? And so, like, I was curious, and I think we both were, but like, right now you have a couple of really important veteran players who could probably buoy a poor team to some garbage wins. Jeremy Grant, Malcolm Brogdon, and maybe you can toss Shaden Sharp into that equation. Maybe, I mean, he's a second year player, but you know, so those players right now, and by the way, Blazers right now, it's not like they're world beaters, but they're looking pretty feisty, competitive. I don't know if it's just teams haven't gotten the scouting reports on some of these players, especially like keep mentioning Delano Banton, who had two career games in a row. One of them was kind of empty calories. And the second game against the Raptors was like a legit, good, effective, efficient game. But the Blazers look okay without those veterans anyway. And so maybe the question is this, and now leave your bet aside. This isn't about Ryan making his money, but like,
as a fan,
and also, you know, as a fan and looking at the fact that some of these teams at the bottom of the league, Washington, two in a row, have won two in a row. Spurs have won one. Hornets have won one. Detroit is 2-8 in their last 10. The Blazers have a chance to possibly sink further into the standings. Should the Blazers be tanking even harder? Why bring back Jeremy Grant? Why bring back Malcolm Brogdon? What do you want to have happen? And what do you think will happen?
It's not, in all honesty, the answer is going to be like for any of the players that the Blazers deem are part of their long-term future. If, you know, if Jeremy Grant is not, or if they're expecting slash they want him to be part of this team for, you know, the next 2 years, you know, DeAndre Ayton, same for him. Malcolm Brogdon, I mean, I think writing's been on the wall forever. Just it is what it is. He's their best trade asset chip-ish kind of thing per se. But for guys like, you know, Matisse and Grant and Ayton, do they want to play? Is there anything like, do they want to be out there? Do they feel as though there's anything for them to prove? You know, Jeremy Grant just got his payday, you know, Ayton, I think next year, the year after that, I swear we just did this exercise of his contract, but you know, he's going to be playing towards another contract at some point. Is there anything that these guys want to prove? If not, you know, just wrap them in ice, keep them on the bench, let some of these young guys go through, let a lot of these two-way guys, you know, go through. Heck, now that the Blazers have, you know, their own, you know, G League team, bring up a remix guy or two and let them, you know, step foot on an NBA floor. So I think it's just all apart. This is kind of a maintaining egos. This is the part of this season in this, you know, this tank rebuild in which, you know, you're just, it's all about the relationships with the guys. What do they want? You're not going to force Jeremy Grant or DeAndre Ayton out there to play a game against Houston and Atlanta. And, you know, on the 25th and the 27th, if they don't want to.
I mean, credit to DeAndre Ayton. He sure looks like he wants to be out there. That dude has been on fire. He looks really, really good. Here's how I think of it. And I'm curious what you think of this framing and whether you agree with it or not. The Blazers have several different pressures that don't perfectly align for them as a franchise at the end of this year and moving forward. One pressure is to lose as many games as possible so you get the highest possible draft pick. The NBA incentivizes teams to lose games in order to get good players in the draft. The Blazers want to do that. That's one pressure. Second pressure is they have young players that they need to develop and see what they have in them, namely among them, Scoot Henderson, Shaden Sharp, to a lesser extent, maybe players like Delano Banton. So they have to get those players minutes and have them develop within some kind of a meaningful NBA context and not just be thrown to the wolves. And then another pressure, the players, like you mentioned, Malcolm Brogdon, Jeremy Grant, maybe DeAndre Ayton, I think Ayton on his contract is nigh untradeable. The Blazers have pressure to showcase those players, to demonstrate to the rest of the league that they have value so that they can trade them for younger players, future assets, et cetera. So first of all, what do you think about those three pressures, the tank for a draft pick, develop the young players, showcase the veterans? How do you feel about those kind of being the things that the Blazers have to think about at this point?
I think showcase the veterans is probably going to be the very tail end bottom of that priority list. Just because I think especially in today's very analytical league in which there's data on every single thing. You know who veterans are. You know, DeAndre Ayton is not going to, you know, even if he's going to ball out and have other games where, you know, like, you know, 30 points and 19 rebounds and whatnot, like he did against Toronto.
We kind of know who he is.
We know who he is. He's not, yeah. You're not going to suddenly get a completely different DeAndre Ayton that you didn't know. So showcasing the veterans is not a thing. You know, the only time that you really see that is when you're trying to prove that a guy, you know, is over an injury. Healthy. And none
in the
of
case
the
of Brogdon, I think that's important, right? Especially given that the other player the Blazers got in that Celtics trade, Robert Williams, is super injured. You know, yeah. Like,
you know, yeah. Malcolm Brogdon could probably be the only one for that. But again, he's also a veteran enough of this league. If he doesn't want to play again, you kind of don't force it.
Showcasing the veterans at the bottom of that priority.
Yeah, you know, the tanking for a draft pick, I think, is that you're probably going to sandwich that in the middle.
Really?
Those last two remaining options. Dog. Those last two remaining options are kind of, you know, they go hand in hand. When you want to see what you got and you're giving some guys a little more run, you know, I think you've got the data set that you're going to have so far on Scoot Henderson as much as this year. You definitely have a data set on Anfernee Simons. Shaedon Sharpe, you know, if he comes back the last, you know, 5 to 10 games, just kind of maybe just let him knock the rust off. But if you're trying to just get eyeballs on pieces that you have, figuring out which ones work, that's just going to kind of, and prioritize that, that's just kind of going to lead into some ping pong ball help, you know, and looking at the rest of the schedule that the Blazers have, you know, there, it's not real. It's not a lot of, you know, the top of the league. So it's going to be a little hard. It's going to be everybody trying to out tank each other. And so you might as well just lean into the, get your developmental numbers and see where everything lies.
I guess I want to push back on that a little bit. The lottery odds have been flattened, so this incentive is maybe less strong than it used to be, but it's still true. If you are one of the four worst teams in the league, you have the four best odds of getting the number one pick. And also, by the way, maybe underrating this.
Incorrect.
Sorry, correct me.
The top three teams have the flat equal odds. Fourth is a different percentage. And fifth is a different percentage. So the top three teams all have a 14% shot at the number one pick. The fourth team in the draft lottery order, 12.5%. And then fifth, which is where Portland currently stands right now, is 10.5%.
So then fact check me on this piece too. And thank you for that. The other thing that I think is kind of underrated in this conversation, the worse you are, the less chance you have of sliding back in the NBA lottery. So it's not even just that you have a better chance than number one pick, you have a better chance of staying higher in that draft. So like,
yes, and no.
Look, like the, well, the,
if,
look,
if you
the,
want, if you want to test it real quick, and sorry to cut you off, you know, I'm on Tankathon. I just hit sim lottery. You said that I simmed it. Detroit fell to sixth from first.
Yes. I mean, that's, thank you for the anecdote, but odds are odds. Okay. Listen, yeah, like as someone who does a little bit of sports betting, you should know better than any of us, odds, sometimes they hit in a weird way. Right. So like, but
yeah, but basically like, the top four in the draft lottery order all have about a 48% chance and up, you know, the top three is 52.1% to stay in the top four.
Fourth place,
48.1 at Portland spot for fifth, it drops all the way down to 42.1. So,
and meanwhile, the Blazers find themselves just 2.5 games back from the Charlotte Hornets for those, you know, slightly better odds and a fourth place slot. So like, I don't know, like, especially given, you know, So all to say, like, the three pressures I mentioned again, like tank for the lottery, develop young players, showcase veterans for trade. I think I'm mostly with you. I wonder, and history should guide us somewhat here, because I wonder how much the Blazers are interested right this very second at putting the best possible team around Scoot Henderson, around Shaedon Sharpe, to see them develop right now in March of 2024, And I wonder how much they're like, you know what, if we could get down to fourth, if we could leapfrog the Charlotte Hornets, you know what? So I do wonder, I don't know about that. Like,
I think that there's some external pressure on the organization to also not necessarily lean into the tank intentionally.
From where? From Adam Silver? As heavy as they could.
No, not from Adam Silver. I think from
fans?
Yes, and I do believe there is a business reason. And I'm not saying that...
Dylan T. Pickle of the Portland Pickles, really.
But I because there's... The Blazers, this is now, and you find this argument a lot. It's, you know, people say, oh, this is year one of the rebuild, year two of the rebuild, year three of the rebuild, you know, and this is year three of the team sucking. Absolute rocks. This is year three of the team sucking. But this is
pull over your eyes.
This, yeah, sorry. Couldn't fool me. But this is, in fact, year one of the rebuild. Once you trade away the franchise player, that is a rebuild. So,
which, by the way, means Buttercup. Like, we got so much more time. It's been like, doesn't that say to you that they would be incentivizing tanking then?
So, but with that is there are fans. So while they are trying to sell a product and sell season tickets and do all of these things, there are fans that have looked at this and people who spend money on the team that have looked at this and they're like, hey, you know, however right or wrong it could be, they're like, we're in year three. We should be better. And it's a misplaced expectations because of sucking for 2 years, but now being in the start of the rebuild. And if you want to look at the if you want to look at the Oklahoma City Thunder as an example, like when they fully just got rid of, you know, the Chris Paul, Paul George and fully went into their rebuild. I think just now this is 5 years removed from that. You know, so like last year was kind of like their first little foray into the, you know, dipping their toes in that playoff water. So that was 4 years. So if you're going to take that, you could say there's possibly three more years of the Blazers not being good, which over that large landscape, then now you're looking at 7 years of this franchise being crappy. Yeah. And that is a very tough needle to thread to not lose fan momentum, fan appreciation, fan dollars. So I do think that there is a little bit in there in which they can't necessarily lean into the very visible, intentional tank as much as some think they should or they could.
That's well said. Here's the problem with that. The Blazers need a franchise player, and they also need a second in command who's like an all NBA adjacent solid all-star player. Now, if you think that Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe are those players, great. Wait, watch them develop, have fun with it. No big deal. They may be those players. They may not be. And so I do hear what you're saying, and I do get that. I do think part of this is like, particularly with Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe being 20 and 21 years old, respectively, I believe there are many years ahead of them being just like ridiculously fun to watch young players, explosive players. They play a brand of basketball, which is interesting and exciting, that the team may or may not have success follow from that and maybe don't need to because they're interesting to watch. So I'm with you. I mean, as we're getting to the point where we need to wrap up here, I just want to hear it from you straight. Ryan, are we in the middle of a 7-year rebuild? Is that what we're facing here? You're the one who said it. And now I've gotten you into a coughing fit. I've killed Ryan Whitledge with my tactical question, but like, no, seriously,
yes.
Look.
It's the middle. It's a middle of a 7-year rebuild.
I'm here for it. We are here for it. We are here for you weekly at WeLikeTheBlazers.com, now part of the Rogue Media Network. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I'm good. Keep going. You're on the roll. You're doing great, Bob.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we have a new outro because, again, part of the Rogue Media Network and the Blazers Edge family of podcasts. Check out Rip City Roundtable and Trail Daddy. Just go to your podcatcher, search for those two names, find them. Rip City Roundtable, hosted by Corey Dickman. He'll have guests. Trail Daddy, hosted by Dave Deckard. I don't think he's going to have guests. Maybe he will. I don't think he will. But you can find us at welikettheblazers.com or at Like the Blazers on Twitter. Until next time, I really do appreciate you all. I am Brandon Goldner. That is Ryan Whitledge. You can find him at The Weedy Ryan, by the way, on Twitter. But we appreciate you. Thank you to Rogue. Thank you to Blazers Edge. Thank you to the fans. Appreciate you. And until next time, go Blazers.
Go Blazers.